WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
You're a good man, Charlie Brown. You're good at what you do, too.
She is Natalie Jacobson.
You are the Dean of South Shore Broadcasters.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
Best-selling author, Dave Wedge. You got to say that.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mayor. Yes. Thank you. Wonderful to be here. Kevin's been a long time. Thanks for all you do. All you know, your local news icon. We appreciate it.
Kathy's doing a great job at this. And I've decided she's jelly. I got to be peanut butter.
There was a debate about
it. There was a debate about that.
There was a debate.
You fine with jelly?
I'm fine with jelly.
Okay, good. Jelly spikes my sugars.
Good evening and welcome to Monday Night Talk. As you know, I am not Kevin Tachi, and I'm going to be your host for the first hour with
Massachusetts State Auditor Diana DeZoglio. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
It's great to be back. Thanks so much for having me, Kevin.
Jermaine Wiggins, member of the 2001 Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. Welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Oh, thank you for having me. Anytime.
Not just economic development, but it's how to get the businesses involved.
Senator, I want to thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you being a voice bringing so much community news to folks here on the South Shore.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. Starting gun is fired, and that means it is the start of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. I will be your race director for the next 2 hours. My name is Kevin Tachi. We kick things off in a few moments, warming up with the bullpen. State House Report with State Representative Kathy Lenatra. Representative?
Mr. Tachi,
Jelly.
Nice to see you again.
Jelly, how are you?
I'm good. It's very sunny in here, I must say.
It is. Well, that's because normally there's... So, folks have already heard many of the on-air personalities mention about that. We're doing a complete overhaul of the second floor. Well, actually throughout the building.
Yes.
I think they started with the restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Worked their ways into the hallways. And then they tackled different rooms. They did the main prod. Then they did the conference room, air conference studio.
Oh, yeah.
And now what was once where the producers would be or the engineers would be, board ops, is right now under being overhauled.
So now he's on my right as opposed to my left.
Yes, but don't say that to him politically.
So, but it is nice to see the sun. It was blinding, so I had to move from my special spot.
There used to be a veteran's voice banner that used to be up there, but we're working on a Monday Night Talk.
We're putting put a shade in pretty soon.
A little shade.
Ooh.
Maybe with the call letters if everybody agrees.
Just the call letters, Larry? Or is it gonna, are you going to have to put, just like, the are there going to be different shows studios that will be like a little flip and then whatever show it is?
We don't have that kind of money.
Because you get
a TV screen in.
That's the fun stuff that happens here. We used to have other shows that followed me. They would already have their banner up.
I remember that vividly.
Be up and they'd have all their stuff in here. And it was like, no.
Pushing us out at the end.
Yeah. You know, we had like 35 seconds to get out because they
pushed out at the beginning.
Yeah. But all is well and all good. So, Representative will be here for the State House Report. And also, our little bit of our health challenge that we started at the beginning of the year.
Wow, the beginning of the year, and we're already in April.
Yes, I think we're in the second quarter, right?
Yes.
Second quarter of the year.
Yeah,
we'll talk more about that.
Okay.
Following the representative, we have New York Times bestselling author Dave Wedge. Don't forget, Dave has been calling in here when he was a former Boston Herald reporter. We're going to talk with him about a couple of different things. First, we'll chat with him in regards to, he had a fun thing he did this weekend with Casey Sherman as part of a true crimes event where they, I guess he'll give us kind of details, some of the things they were doing. Hampton's Whodunit True Crime Festival.
Ooh, that sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Yep. We'll talk with him about that. Also talk with him about the 11th anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombing.
I know.
Yeah. Knowing that they wrote the book, A Boston Strong.
Mm-hmm.
His take on that. Also chat with him about the passing of longtime Boston Herald columnist Joe Fitzgerald, who passed away in March and followed by Patriot Ledger lost its longtime local reporter, Fred Hansen. Fred actually collapsed a couple of weeks ago outside of Braintree Town Hall.
Oh,
and so
tragic.
And Dave was the one who kind of reached down. It's like, hey, if we have a moment, can we kind of talk a little bit about Fred? Fred was kind of a staple here when it came to South Shore News. So I said, sure, why not? So then we'll follow that up. We're going to speak with Adira Landry, Dr. Adira Landry, and Dr. Risa Lewis. And we're going to talk with them. They're authors of Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact. And one of the things that's kind of funny is that some of the stuff that they talk about is trying to find a way to, you know, be able to maintain, do things like meetings. How many times have you sat in like a 4-hour meeting and been like, I will never get these 4 hours back?
Oh, many times.
Many times.
Many times.
The many meetings that I've covered over the years. But they talk about things like how to be able to convert your skill sets and be able to do the most with the least amount.
The least amount of time.
Yeah. So we'll talk with them about that.
That's interesting.
Then we'll close things out. This is, if you remember a couple of weeks ago, we had Keith Hayes on, radio personality from Hoobazoo.com. We're doing a follow-up in regards to sports entertainment. As last weekend, WWE had their big WrestleMania extravaganza. Mike Riley, who is the game day voice for the New England Patriots and Revolution, that's at Gillette Stadium, he'll be joining us to talk about that. He actually was at the WrestleMania event in Philadelphia, so we'll chat with him about that. So, all coming up, if you are patient and you wait, but we turn our focus now to Representative Kathy Lenatra. How are things going as far as your health challenge?
Well, Kevin, it's going. It is going. You know, I started working out in January. One of my goals was to increase my strength and flexibility. Definitely have increased my strength, lifting much heavier. I love to lift weights, so that's one of my... So it's kind of my release.
Free weights, or do you like...
I like free weights. I like to punch a punching bag. I love my Peloton, which I've had for a long time. So that, I've noticed, like, I can hold a plank much longer. I'm, you know, up to 20 pounds with a dumbbell doing curls, you know, my arms. So, like, I feel better there. Flexibility, not so much. Not so much. I golfed the other day, and my hips were sore the rest of the day. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. So I do need to take a couple yoga classes or just stretch. And then the water. Are you getting in all your water?
Yes.
You are?
I love water.
Thank you for this bottle, because this is probably my second bottle today.
I'll have two bottles of water during a show.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. I know people who are like, I can't stand the taste of water.
I love water. Mm. I just feel like I just forget to drink it. Mm. You know, my day goes on. I'm like, I haven't had anything to eat today except for four cups of coffee. So I went back to that, which is not a good way to be.
So when I think... Not last time. I think we've actually had three times that we've been together.
I believe it's three.
All right. Mm-hmm. I would say the last time I talked to you that I was pending a visit with my dietitian.
I think you had the visit, but you didn't discuss it fully.
Yes. So when I went for the visit, it's one of those things where they, you know, you go in, they weigh you. It's where you take off most of your clothing, mm-hmm. socks, shoes. And then they measure your circumference of your midsection and poking you and prodding you and I wasn't too happy with what they had for a number for me, although my bathroom scale is a little bit friendlier, but usually just a different way that I weigh myself. I usually have a lot less clothing, and so it helps me a little bit. I will say that I was pushing almost three bills.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you know that when you went in, or were you surprised?
No, it's one of those things where I check on a regular basis.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, you know, it's like it's procrastinating. All right, yeah, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally the doctor's like, you know, there's going to come a day when there's not going to be a tomorrow, and you're laying on a gurney, and they're not going to be able to get your heart started.
That's frightening. That's frightening.
Yeah,
that's a wake-up call, right?
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's very true. So put me on a diet, 1,500 calories, a lot of water, yet sobering. watch the sugars, the certain things that
And
what's crazy is that like the next week I was going on my cruise. And I'm like,
oh, that's a tough one.
No, it wasn't as tough. You know, normally me and the significant other, we would normally like the fun thing is like after we have like a nice dinner in the dining room, we don't do the, we usually save the middle of the day or maybe in the morning where we might do the buffet.
Mm-hmm.
But usually like, you know, habitually we're late night snackers, and when we go down and there's like we talked about this.
We did, yes.
You know, yeah. I think I sent you pictures from the cruise with the pizza pirate.
Yeah.
And they're like, people lined up for that pizza, I'll tell you. It didn't look all that good, but they had a ton of desserts. And we would notoriously go down and we would pile a plate full of desserts and go back to the room like, look what we got.
All these goodies.
Look what we got. And yeah, so we didn't do that.
Good.
And the other thing we did was, and this is, Sandy was big on this, was like, we were on the first level. The first, that's where our room was.
Okay.
And so she's like, let's not take the elevator. I'm like, oh, man. I would get up to the fifth level. I'm like, oh, can we take the elevator? She goes, no, just catch your breath and we'll go up. And they did that.
That's great.
Yes, we did that. So then I got back and it's just a matter of watching what I'm eating, not eating late at night. If there's a jar of peanut butter, it's not there for long. I get a, you know, it's one of those things where you, there's just little habits you got to break.
It's like micro, what's the book work? Micro skills?
Yes.
It's like micro skills. It's the little things
look
that make
you.
A big difference,
so
isn't
good.
It?
Yes.
But it's true. It's,
yes.
You know, your water just taking the stairs is a big thing. Getting sleep.
That's
big
huge.
Thing. I'm trying to at least get 7 hours, which is tough for me, but I'm doing really well at that.
So depending on whose scale you go by, if you go by theirs, now I haven't done an update with them, I could have lost as much as 30 pounds.
That's fantastic. Fantastic.
But if you go by the one at home, which might be more the honest one, it's about like 22 pounds.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I noticed as soon as I came in.
Look, I'm also wearing black.
As soon as I came in.
It makes it more svelte. Nobody can see it at home, but I think Larry would agree. Yeah.
Looking pretty good. You get up those stairs pretty fast tonight.
I did. I thought
well,
I was
there's no elevator here.
There's no elevator here.
No. There is.
I haven't found it yet. I'm looking.
No. Maybe it's coming with the new renovations.
So enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Let's talk about me.
So next time we talk, hopefully we'll be still continuing down the path of good health.
Yeah. I'm making it a lifestyle. I'm making it a lifestyle along with my husband. We're doing really well. I told you my
How's
kids.
Mike doing?
Mike's doing great. He's doing really well. He's working a ton, you know, as usual. We're like sometimes just two ships that pass in the night, but sometimes that works,
yep.
You know,
yep.
It works. But as I, you know, I told you before, all my children are meal preppers. So they all prep for the week. So I'm trying to convince them to prep for their mother.
Smart.
Isn't that a good
idea?
Hey,
listen, how many years you do it for them?
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking.
You know what you say? You say, you know what would be a great Mother's Day gift?
Yes.
It's coming up.
It is coming up.
You know, if you gave me a year's worth of meal prep, I would be one of the best gifts ever.
Wouldn't it? I don't know if they could do it for a year. Well, Lydia's leaving us.
Well, you know, you set the bar high and see where they go.
Yeah, we'll try. Lydia's the best. She's my only, you know, I have three sons and a daughter, and she's going to be leaving us in September. She is committed to Fairfield.
Yay.
I'm excited because we were going to look at the College of Charleston, and she thought that was definitely it. But, you know, I think things happen for a reason. And Thursday we went to the airport and our flight was canceled. So I'm like, this is a sign. You know, what if there was an emergency, you need to get home and your flight was canceled? It's not close. There's no train. You can just pop on and be home in a few hours. So we're happy about that. Yeah.
And again, I also want to thank the folks. There have been other folks out there who followed what we've been doing. So thank you for tuning in and sending messages and saying, hey, great, and kudos and cheering on. So
keep up the fight.
Keep up the fight. So let's talk a little bit about next week. You guys in the house, you guys will roll up your sleeves, and there's going to be all kinds of discussions about
budget week.
Yeah, budget week. Where do things stand with the house budget right now? It's
the house budget was released on the 10th, and I have to be honest, I thought it was going to be dire. And it really wasn't. You know, it really wasn't. It's a great budget. The chair of Ways and Means and his staff did a remarkable job working on it. I'm on Ways and Means along with my colleague Matt Muratori, and we had all our hearings across the Commonwealth once again, and heard all the requests from our agencies, which was, you know, quite interesting. People know that they're not going to get a lot of money this year. You know, it's a lot of level funding. But some of the highlights, I think, is, you know, it, everywhere you go, you're hearing school cuts, right? Are you hearing that too?
Well, I find it funny that there's going to be school cuts, knowing that the Student Opportunity Act was passed just a couple of years ago. That was supposed to be a seven-year endeavor.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, I was interested in that, too. And we have our Chapter 70 funds and that formula, which is really confusing if you're not familiar. But what happens if your classes, your school attendance enrollment is what I'm trying to say, the enrollment is declining, is that formula doesn't work for you. It's not going to work for you. So what we've done is we've done per pupil. So we've gone up $75 per pupil to make it $104 per pupil, which will really help a lot of my towns like Halifax and Pembroke where their attendance is declining. Mm. So that came out in the House budget, which I think is going to be very helpful for all of our towns. Of course, you know, it has to go through the Senate and be signed by the governor. But I'm really optimistic about that. So, you know, and we are funding the Student Opportunity Act. Another thing, we're continuing the free lunches, which I think has really made an improvement with children. All our students not being hungry. There's no stigma. I think that's been a real asset to the Commonwealth in our schools. So looking at that, you know, I'm going to put in my local amendments like I always do. I have one I'm putting in for the Plymouth County Fire Chiefs. So they have a mutual radio system, which is mutual aid. So, you know, if Kingston is on too many calls and Duxbury needs to cover, that's considered mutual aid. So they have radios, and the radios weren't working when they were in Kingston to Duxbury, which is quite frightening. Mm. So this will ensure they get money in the budget every year, but I want to make it a line item so it's never cut. So we always have that safety in place for our firefighters. And, you know, fishing partnership, putting in money for them, very important there. Help with our mental health and health care for our fishermen and Harbor Health. Do you know about Harbor Health?
You're going to tell me and the rest of the folks who are listening.
I know. Harbor Health is a great community health center in Cordage Park, and they do great things for people on MassHealth or lower income folks, and they are expanding. So a little money to help them expand.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Are you expecting any lengthy conversations? I mean, I know usually when it comes time for the budget, is this going to be something where you're going to have multiple long nights? And what usually happens during those long nights?
There are long nights. We're usually there to like 10:30, 11, and then start again like 8, 9 a.m. What happens, there's a lot of amendments. There is 1,400 amendments that the House of Representatives have put in.
And so this is all financial.
This is, no, most, it doesn't have to be financial.
It doesn't have to, okay.
No, not at all. It could be a change in a law. It could be just adding a line item, changing wording. There's all sorts of things. I would say the majority are financial, to increase funds for a certain organization or to get something for your town. Kingston has its 300th, I believe. Am I wrong there with the 300th? So no, you're looking at me like you should know this, Kevin. I should know this, too.
I would think it was somewhere close to 400.
350th? No? Oh, I'm looking at Larry. No, everyone's, no one knows.
You know what's really cool?
Boy.
And nobody can hear this, but Google is your friend.
I know. God, I'm embarrassed that I didn't have that written down.
That's okay. You might be right and not know it.
But, you know, funds like last budget, I was able to get funds for the Veterans Memorial in Kingston, which is, you know, things that the town can't really fund. So I don't think there'll be much of that this year. I'll still put in and see what we get and cross our fingers and hope we get some good things.
What do you look forward to when it comes to budget season, when it comes time for the House? I mean, you're an old pro at this now.
Oh, I'm an old pro at this.
Yes.
Yeah, this is my third session. Yeah. Isn't that crazy how fast that flies? You know what I really look forward to? I look forward that everybody's there, and they're there for the entire week. So you catch up, you can bounce things off each other, whether it has to do with the budget or whether it has to do with something happening in your district. So it's really a lot of camaraderie that happens during that week. A lot of late nights, as you said, and we don't usually eat that well, which isn't good, but I'm going to try. Maybe I'll meal prep for that. There we go.
It's not a bad
idea. I have
a
new cooler I bought last year. I think I will try that. But that's what I like the most, is you really get to listen to what's happening in everybody's district. And maybe it might be something that you're having an issue with in your district. And to come to a solution, which is really great.
Now, I think you had touched upon, what your district stands to gain from this particular budget. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you've usually been successful in what you put in for your district? Is it usually...
I've been very successful in the past. I've already had my meeting with the chair of Ways and Means. I had it early. And, you give your priorities. You give them a list of what you want to put in for amendments. And these are my priorities. I bring cookies, anything that helps. And, he'll be helpful if he can.
What's the latest with any of the legislation that you've been working on? Some of the key pieces. I mean, last time I had you in here, it was prior to where things stand when they either will come out of committee
A lot of things have been out of the committee favorably, which is great.
Yep.
I had an extension on my officer wellness bill that I've been on this channel as well as other media pushing that with Jay Creed. So that's been extended. I know that Jimmy had a great meeting with one of the chairs last week, the Senate chair last week, Walter Timmelty. So we're hoping.
Okay. What else is going on in your district? Anything you want to kind of chat about real quick? Anything, some of your activities since the last time we had you in here?
I haven't done bingo in a while, so I think it's time for me to do bingo with the senior center, I know. But it's been a long time.
Which senior center? Do you go to Kingston?
Or? I've been doing bingo in Kingston for about 15 years now.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you pulling numbers? Are you sitting and dobbing?
Oh, no. I'm pulling numbers. Well, we have the balls there. And then we have the whole system.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
I got you.
Big deal in Kingston.
Oh, yeah.
Big deal in Plymouth, too.
Really?
Big deal in Plymouth. But we've had a lot of ribbon cuttings, a lot of new businesses popping up. Have you ever seen that? Like in Plymouth?
I have.
We have a new brewery in Kingston that's fabulous. Lots of new small businesses. It's so good to see. They've been popping up. Going to our senior centers, our volunteer luncheons, been a lot of volunteer luncheons. It's been a lot going on. In spring and summer is coming up. A lot of galas. We just had the Kingston Public Library Gala. We have TICs coming up in June, and it's local for me, so that's always good.
It's always good.
It's always good.
Well, and it's also the second half of your legislative session, which means that time for you to get ready for the marathon that is re-election.
Yes, yes. I feel like you're always on that marathon for re-election. 2 years flies by. So happy to run again. Hopefully we'll be re-elected again. I love my job. I worked really hard at my job. So I'm having my re-election kickoff. So good segue right there.
I know, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yes. My re-election kickoff is going to be May 1st. And this year it's going to be at Alden Park in Colony Place.
Very nice.
Yeah, 6 to 8. So there'll be nice food there. They do a wonderful array of appetizers, and they do great pizzas there. So it'll be there. So anybody that wants to join us, that will be May 1st at Alden Park from 6 to 8.
What are you looking forward to as far as folks when you talk about re-election? I mean, what is it like beckoning back, a year and a half ago when you were re-elected? I mean, do you feel that issues have changed from 2 years ago? Do you feel that there are a lot of things that are
The same
that folks that this is what they expect, this is what they want, especially when it comes to their state representative?
I think the top issue this year is going to be migration. It's definitely going to, Kingston, we have Baymont Hotel. So I think that is going to be on the top of everybody's mind. It's not sustainable. We know it's not sustainable, right? So we did vote on funding again for the EA system, and we did put a caveat in there that there was a 9-month stay, right? There was a deadline after 9 months.
Is there a financial cap to it as well, or not so much?
There's not a financial cap. The House did not fund as much as the governor wants. We've been talking about it in the House. We know that it's not sustainable. Even allies, we all know, this isn't sustainable. And if it continues the way it's continuing, we're going to cut into things that we don't want to cut into. So we talk about that all the time, trying to find a solution. And there needs to be a solution. And until the federal government steps up, they put us here. The federal government put us here, and we're dealing with it the best we can. And
Is there any concern? You look at what's going on with... when it comes to abortion, and it's being bandied about by folks who are running for office that maybe states should have some say in that area. What's the possibility that when it comes to immigration, that's something else the federal government looks and says, well, maybe each state should have its own, you know, way of dealing with immigration, how to, you know, assist immigrants when they come to the country.
Well, Massachusetts, we're a right to shelter state.
Correct.
So what that means, what a lot of people don't know what that means, is if you are a family with children or a pregnant woman, then we will not put you on the street
right.
at night.
Right.
It does not mean if you're a single male or you're a married couple without children or a single female, that is not included in a right to shelter. So it's just, again, a lot of people don't understand. It is a family with children or a pregnant woman that is included, and that's the right to shelter law. And I, you know, New York City has it as well, and I believe Massachusetts, we're the only ones. So when there's a family that comes across the border, or they're here, or they go to a church down south, they will say, you know, Massachusetts will help you. They're a right to shelter state. So I think that is a lot of the issue. But even if the federal government does put on each state, where's that funding coming from? It has to come from the federal government.
It does.
It has to. I get really, you know, I'm like, oh.
Passionate.
But it really passionate, because it's a federal issue that was dropped on our lap, and we're put in a position. The Commonwealth was put in a horrible position. We don't want families out on the streets, right? If we don't fund, what happens? Then we have tent cities. Right. And then what happens? So our children see tents of families, and then our children, and we become immune to that. So it's a whole thing, Kevin. It's a whole thing.
A whole other conversation.
We'll have to. We will get into that someday. Let's get into that.
All right. Well, let's right now, for folks who are constituents of yours, if they need constituent services, they need to reach out to you.
Yes.
How can they do that?
Constituent service. So I will. Let me just give a shout out to the town of Pembroke.
Okay.
Because as most of you know, my former colleague, Rep. Josh Cutler, has a new position with the administration. He is now the Undersecretary of Labor and Workforce, working on apprenticeships, which is a fabulous job for him. He will do amazing work there. It is his bailiwick. He will do amazing work. So I did share the towns of Pembroke and Halifax with him, and I have always taken ownership, I say it, of the whole town of Pembroke and the whole town of Halifax. So no matter where you live in Halifax or Pembroke and you have an issue, please reach out to my office. Happy to assist with any constituent issue that you have. Always can reach me. I think the best is just put my name in Google, our friend Google, and all the phone numbers and the emails will pop up. And I have Christine, who's my chief of staff, and I have Stephanie Landry, who is the director of constituent services, and they are amazing, and they have helped so many people over the past 6 years. And as I said, you know, when people call us, sometimes it's their last ditch effort to get help. And it's such a privilege, honestly, such a privilege to be able to help people.
We want to thank you for joining us for this segment. Again, the door is open. You're welcome to stay for the show if you want.
Or if you want to
head home and head off to your district, you're welcome to do that as well.
I have to say, Kevin, with the weather so beautiful, I should probably go for that walk, right?
Maybe you should. She is State Rep. Kathy Lenatra, our guest here. We're going to step aside. More Monday Night Talk in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Eat, drink, and socialize at the Patio at McWiggins in Whitman Center. Sit down with a specialty cocktail and start your meal off with a patio sampler with chicken wings, egg rolls, potato skins, fried cauliflower, and chicken and biscuits. Watch the game on 7 55-inch monitors while digging into braised short ribs, fish tacos, Fig and Goat Cheese flatbread, or Koji steak tips. Relax and listen to the live entertainment at the patio every Friday and Saturday night. And don't forget, McWiggins Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in downtown Whitman.
Mark your calendar for the Talking Information Center Starry Night Gala, happening on Thursday, June 6th, 5 till 9 at Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston. For a packed night of food and fun to raise awareness for this longtime South Shore nonprofit organization. Give me something to celebrate. The Talking Information Center is a volunteer-driven radio reading service serving the visually impaired population of Massachusetts. The evening is hosted by WATD radio personality Rob Hakala, and live music and dancing provided by the multi-New England Music Award-nominated band Total Strangers. The evening also features great auction items and recognition of star TIC volunteers of over 46 years. That's the Talking Information Center Starry Night Gala, Thursday, June 6th, 5 till 9, at Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston. For tickets, more information, or to just make a contribution, visit the Talking Information Center at ticnetwork.org. That's ticnetwork.org.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
A couple of quick notes. Hey, if there's something in regards to the show, something you like, any question you have, check us out. Send us an email, mondaynighttalk@gmail.com. Also, quick note, the Jeff Koombs Memorial Foundation is hosting a fundraiser this Friday, April 19th from 7 to 11 p.m. at the Lucky's 777 Bar and Grill in Holbrook. Ticket price is $30 per person. Features music by the band Slider Rocks, food and raffles. I can go online. There's online auctions through May 1st. This is www.32auctions.com/Jeff Koombs Fund. Auction items include something for everyone, tickets to all four Boston sports, Delta Airlines gift cards, art, and more. Funds raised will enable the foundation to continue assisting Massachusetts residents affected by death, illness, and assist Massachusetts residents affected by death, illness, and other difficulties. Monies raised from the fundraiser will specifically be earmarked for Abington and South Shore families. Again, if you want more information on the event, to learn more about the foundation, email Christy at Jeff Koombs Fund. Koombs is COOMBS fund@gmail.com. The Jeff Koombs Memorial Fund, actually the Jeff Koombs Memorial Foundation, was founded in November of 2001 in memory of Jeff, an Abington husband, father of three, who was killed in the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Since its inception, the JCMF has raised and distributed well over $1 million to families, enrichment programs in the schools, special programs in towns, and scholarships to Abington High School college-bound seniors. So keep that in mind. Without any further ado, joining us, the gentleman who is a regular guest on here, a great conversationalist. Unfortunately, he is a fan of the Montreal Canadiens, but we won't hold that against him. He's one and only Dave Wedge, New York Times best-selling author, writer for Boston Magazine, former Boston Herald reporter, joining us. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm good. You got to lead with the Canadian stuff and have your fans change the station on me.
No. But you know what? I feel bad. I was pulling for the Eagles this weekend, and you know, hoping that they would break that 12-year drought in college hockey.
Yeah, it was a tough loss, you know. But you know, hot goalie, and
yeah,
it was a tough night. I was pretty disappointed because that's one of the best BC hockey teams I've seen in my life, and I've seen some good ones. But that goalie really, you know, literally stood on his head and just, you know, he won them the title. So kudos to Denver; they deserved it.
Yeah, and they actually took, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they took out UMass, BU, and then BC.
Yeah, they did. They won all the games 2-1, and they shut out BC, which, you know, that's, I mean, you've got seven, you know, first round NHL draft picks on the BC team, and you know, three or four of those guys are top 10 picks that are, you know, going to be playing in the All-Star game in the NHL within a year or two, you know. So that goalie really is something special, and he had a fantastic tournament.
Knowing that you are the author of Boston Strong, today being the 11th anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombing, do you have a chance to watch any of the marathon?
I didn't today, Kevin. You know, I usually do, you know, I go to some events, you know, over the years I've gone to events to, you know, remembrances and things like that. And sometimes I'll just go and watch the race. You know, last year I took my son Jackson to the the Red Sox game. But this year we just kind of did something different and spent some time together as a family. So
excellent.
But great, beautiful day. The weather was amazing, and it's just a beautiful day for the city.
Indeed. Well, the reason why we have you are here kind of chatting is a couple of well-known Boston and local reporters who have passed away. Longtime Boston Herald columnist Joe Fitzgerald passing away at the age of 79 in March.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a couple of weeks ago, Patriot Ledger lost a longtime reporter, Fred Hansen, who actually collapsed outside of Braintree Town Hall after he covered a school committee meeting. What would you give me your thoughts? We start with Joe. I'm sure you had time to work with Joe and cross paths with him.
Yeah. I mean, for just big picture, two, giants in Boston journalism. Mm. Both of them are iconic sort of writers, and both of them spent their careers at one paper. Joe Fitzgerald at the Herald, he's a fixture at the paper for 35 plus years, and Fred Hansen, obviously 40 plus years at the Ledger, and a fixture, and a fixture in the community too. So but Joe Fitzgerald, I started the Boston Herald in 1999, and those were kind of the last glory days of the Herald, those late 90s, early 2000s, before the internet took hold and started kind of really hurting the newspapers. Joe was a must read, and he I didn't always agree with him, and he had a lot of conservative viewpoints that a lot of people didn't agree with, but when he wrote a really good column that he really took the time and interviewed the subjects and really put a human face on a certain issue, there was no one better in the city. And he really, as a person, he was a wonderful person. He, welcomed me into the paper. He, I looked at him as one of my many mentors at the Herald. Again, you walk in there on a Friday night at 8 o'clock, and Joe, I'd be coming back from a crime scene, and you walk through the newsroom, and Joe would be there, clacking away at his keyboard, writing his column. And and he was great to me, and obviously my wife Jessica, who Jessica Heslam, who was a columnist at the Herald too. And Joe was great to us personally. We had some losses in our lives, and Joe was always there for us when I lost my mother. And he was a real guy. And when his wife passed, he wrote a beautiful column. And when my dad passed a couple years ago, Joe came to the wake. So I miss him, and I think that he served the Herald Read as well for a long time.
Does it, as someone who has come from a scribe like the Herald and has followed the Enterprise and the Ledger during your coming up into in Brockton, is it sad to see that we're losing not only great individuals like this, pillars of journalism in the Boston area, but that the newspaper industry is slowly waning as well?
It is sad to watch. I thought the Globe did a really good piece about Fred the other day, and they talked about how he's, one of the last, kind of last of that era. There's a lot of young reporters that are still doing great work, but, there aren't a lot of reporters that are going to put in 40-plus years at a community newspaper anymore because, frankly, the jobs just aren't there. And, Fred was a friend first and foremost. He was a great friend to me and Jess, and he was great to my kids, Jackson and Danielle, and wonderful human. But as a reporter and the work that he did in the community, what's so sad is that he won't be replaced. There's no one that can do what Fred did. There's no one that's going to replace that community journalism, and that's tough. It's tough for the town of Braintree. It's tough for the town of Milton, where I live now, and Quincy and Randolph and all the towns that he covered. And, those towns lost the taxpayers in those towns and the residents of those towns. They've lost something pretty important to those communities.
Yeah, I mean, that's your transparency. That's someone who is, if you can't get to those meetings, they can kind of break down, like, you know, to the nuts and the bolts of what took place and how this could have an effect on you.
Well, you know, Fred, what he was great at was, you know, he was the guy that he loved to work nights, and he loved covering the night meetings, and he would sit through those 3-, 4-, 5-hour marathon school committee and planning board and selectmen meetings. And you know, he did that so that he could inform the community of what was important to their lives.
Yes.
And that's not an easy thing to do. And he did a great job. And, you know, when he passed, Kevin, and when I first heard about it, you know, frankly, you were one of the first people I thought of, because you do a similar thing here on WATD, informing your listeners in all the communities. You know, you guys are one of the last bastions of local community radio, and that's why I'm such a supporter of this station, and I'll come on anytime, because what you guys do and what Fred did and what these community newspapers that are still active are doing is, you know, keeping that sense of community alive, you know, that a lot of people are forgetting every day when they're caught up in their, you know, Instagram reels, their TikToks, and, you know, the AP and, you know, the wire services and social media. It's like, okay, but what's going on in your town? What's going on in your neighborhood? You know, do you even know? And people like you and people like Fred and Joe Fitzgerald were those voices of the community.
We should also note that I thought Fred did a really nice job, a nice write-up on Riding with Evil. He did it in March of 22 about your book and a lot of the details in it.
He did, you know, and that's another thing, you know, Fred, you know, he wrote a lot about my books, and obviously my co-author, Casey Sherman, was another friend of the station.
Yep.
You know, every time we had a new book come out, whether it was together or separate, he would take the time, and he always went and bought the book. He would buy it and then call us and say, hey, I just finished it. I'd like to do a piece. Can you talk to me about it? You know, he was never one of these reporters that would call and say, you know, hey, can you get me a copy of your book and send it over to the newsroom? Like, he loved to read, and he loved to buy the books and hold it in his hands and think about it. And, yeah, I mean, you know, he told me one of the last conversations I had with him, he had told me how proud he was of that story that he wrote about my book, Riding with Evil, which is, you know, about the pagan motorcycle gang. And he told me several times how proud he was that, you know, after more than a year and a half, was still one of the top read stories on the Ledger website. They have like a running top 20 list, and that story was on there, and he was super proud of that, you know.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dave Wedge, New York Times best-selling author, talking a little bit about the passing of a couple of well-known Boston journalists who have passed away. Fred Hansen with the Patriot Ledger and Joe Fitzgerald, columnist with the Boston Herald. Previous to that, though, writing sports for the Herald, which was interesting. I also didn't know that Joe had written 6 books, but the things that you find out later on in life.
Yeah, no, and I think both of them, you know, I think the tributes to both of them afterwards speak volumes, you know, and if you saw the write-up in the Globe and you saw the beautiful write-up in the Ledger,
yep.
And, you know, there's been a ton of, you know, I mean, you know, people like John Chesto from the Boston Globe, you know, did a big post about Fred, and, you know, Jessica, you know, my wife, and all sorts of, you know, all his colleagues, Ken Johnson, the former editor of the Ledger. I think that, you know, the measure of a person is really how they're remembered, right? And their legacy. And you know, no one has, you know, I think I can say Fred would be very honored and proud of the way that, you know, all this has been handled. You know, there's 400 or 500 people at his services, and, you know, everyone that he ever worked with took the time to go and remember him, and because, you know, he earned that, you know, he earned it.
Before we let you go, and I can't let you go without sharing with folks one of your recent articles in the Boston Magazine about the former girlfriend of gangster Stephen the Rifleman Flemmy. Talk to us about what it was like to do the story on Shirley Grisby.
Sure. So this story, you know, as these stories do, they just come to you from different people and say, hey, you know, this person. So Shirley has, you know, she hasn't been in hiding, but she has kept a low profile. She somehow managed to, you know, she was Steve Fleming's girlfriend for more than a decade in the 60s and 70s, and somehow she was able to stay out of all the trials. You know, she was with Flemmy before he was even with Bulger, but at the time that she was with Flemmy, Flemmy was on the run from a previous indictment that he skipped town on. So she had a lot of a lot of stories about his life on the run and you know, the people he was running around with, including, you know, Cadillac Frank Salemi and things like that. So she had this great story that she wanted to tell, and she just never had the opportunity. So we, you know, someone put me in touch with her, and, you know, she's 85 years old now, and I, you know, her story is, it's pretty incredible. It's incredible that she's alive with what she went through, not just the way that she was treated by Steve Flemmy, but the fact that, you know, if you look at all the people that are no longer here because of Bulger and his cronies, there's a lot of people like Shirley, you know, girlfriends and wives and things like that, that maybe knew too much. So the FBI, you know, one of the things, I don't want to give away the story if people decide to read it, but one of the big things in the story, she says that the FBI told her when they first finally tracked her down to question her about Flemmy was, "We can't believe you're alive."
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And again, now this is, are they digital? Would they be able to find copies on the newsstands right now and digital copies?
It's out on the newsstands now in the April edition, and it's online at bostonmagazine.com, and it's one of the top stories. You can just click on it and read it there. It's free.
Anything else in closing before we let you go, my friend?
No, I appreciate you taking the time, Kevin, to talk about Fred and Joe, and you know, really, again, I can't, you know, thank WATD and the team down there for all you do, because, you know, it's important. And I'm a big believer in local news. And, you know, certainly Fred was a big, you know, big part of our life as a family. And, yeah. And I think he was a big part of the South Shore community. And, you know, I'm going to miss him a lot.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. A big guy who he may have come across a little gruff sometimes, but he was very affable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Dave, until next time, thank you very much for joining me.
All right. Thanks, sir.
You got it. There we go. We're going to step aside. Hour number two of Monday Night Talk, straight ahead here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Later this hour, Mike Riley, the Sarge, game day voice at Gillette Stadium for the New England Patriots and Revolution. Keith Hayes, radio personality with Hoobazoo.com, talking a little sports entertainment. Quick note here, the Jeff Koons Memorial Foundation is hosting a fundraiser this coming Friday, April 19th. This is from 7 to 11 p.m. It'll be at Lucky's 777 Bar and Grill in Holbrook. Tickets, $30 per person. It features music by the band Slider Rocks, food and raffles. There's also online auctions that'll be running until May 1st. You can go online to www.32auctions.com/Jeff Koombs Fund. Koombs is COOMBS. Auction items include something for everyone, tickets to all four Boston sports, Delta Airlines gift card, art, and more. Now, these funds raised will enable the foundation to continue assisting Massachusetts residents affected by death, illness, and other difficult circumstances that are beyond their control. Money raised from the fundraiser will specifically be earmarked for Abington and other South Shore families. For more information on the event and to learn more about the foundation, email Christy at Jeff Koombs, COOMBS fund at gmail.com. The Jeff Koombs Memorial Foundation was founded in November 2001 in memory of Jeff, an Abington husband and father of three, who was killed in the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And since its inception, the JCMF has raised and distributed well over $1 million to families, enrichment programs in the schools, special programs in local towns, and scholarships to Abington High college-bound seniors. Joining us right now is to talk a little bit about their book, Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact. And ladies, correct me if I'm wrong. We'll start with Dr. Adira Landry. Is that correct?
Adira Landry. That was very close. Nice to be here.
Say that again.
Adira Landry.
Adira. Okay. And Risa Lewis. Dr. Risa Lewis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, glad to be here.
Ladies, welcome to the show. Myself is somebody who could probably use a little knowledge when it comes to micro skills. I'm looking forward to this. First, if you could tell us each about a little bit about yourselves. Dr. Landry, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So thank you so much for having us here. My name is Dr. Adira Landry. I'm an emergency medicine physician in Boston, and I've spent the last 8 years or so building my career, actually developing the career of others. I help early career professionals navigate education and academic or professional workplaces. So I help with communication, with finding expertise, with self-care, all sorts of aspects that make people feel good about their job, about their career.
Okay. And Dr. Lewis.
So my name is Dr. Risa Lewis, and I'm actually a New Englander by birth from Rhode Island, and I heard all the Massachusetts references. I'm an emergency medicine physician and a podcaster, and I'll say a storyteller. I'm committed to the spoken voice and the written voice. And over the years, I have served in the capacity of medical educator and mentor, and increasingly, I've written the stories of these experiences, articles with Dr. Landry to help navigate the workplace, and all of this writing and storytelling has culminated into the book that we're discussing today.
So how did the two of you come together? Have you both worked hand in hand? Did you go to school? Are you friends?
You know, our story is really speaks to the power of networking. I was looking at jobs in Boston. Risa was familiar with the workplace in Boston and all of the different hospitals. And so I just asked someone I knew, I tapped into their network, if they could introduce me to someone else, and they recommended Risa. And we had a few more conversations, some via the phone, some over a pub in Ireland, but we got to know each other. And over time, we began writing articles because there were some overlapping workplace issues that we felt that we both wanted to change. We both wanted to change the way email occurred. We wanted to change the way meetings were scheduled. We wanted to change the way letters of recommendation were written. And we aligned there. And we had a lot of positive feedback on the articles we wrote together. And just thinking bigger, better, scaling up, a book seemed like the natural next step after the articles were done.
So, Dr. Lewis, what exactly are micro skills? And is this something that everybody possesses or that we need to hone?
It's a great question. So micro skills are exactly what they sound like. They are small, fundamental building blocks or steps that help you achieve goals, projects, tasks, yes, even habits and character traits, things that seem really big and large and overwhelming. But what we talk about in the book is breaking them down into small, actionable, fundamental building blocks. And when you look at books that talk about the workplace, talk about, for example, becoming a good communicator, giving feedback, holding a difficult conversation, a lot of times they just say, well, you just need to hold it or just do it. But they don't actually tell you the how. So these building blocks, these micro skills, are literally the actionable how-tos.
Okay. So I guess my next question is my understanding from some of the research I did is that you each shared some of, you were candid about some of your struggles when it came to this. What would you say, Dr. Landry, were some of the hardest to achieve when it came to these micro skills?
Actually, one of the last microskills in the book was probably the hardest to achieve for me personally, and that is pausing before accepting an opportunity. I grew up in the professional space with this mantra being told to me, and that was say yes to everything. A lot of people told me to say yes to everything. Whatever comes your way, say yes to it. You never know what it's going to, you know, provide for you later in life. And so I did that. I fully subscribed to this, you know, thought process. And what happened was I ended up becoming overwhelmed. I had so many things on my plate. At one point, I had three academic professional titles. And, you know, many people would just have one of those. I had three plus two new children, young children. And so I was maxed out. And I think a lot of it was because I didn't understand how to pause and to take time between hearing an opportunity and coming back with my final answer. So in the book, we talk about the power of asking questions and inquiring upfront about an opportunity before you say yes, going home, thinking about it, talking to other people about it, and reflecting on if this is something you really want to do. And then after all of that, you can give someone an answer. And it's just really trying to move away from that impulse to say yes to someone because you feel guilty, because you feel ashamed or obligated. You don't want to let someone down. All of those reasons are completely respectable. And yet we also want to just normalize that it's okay to say, let me think about it.
So I would ask you, Dr. Lewis, so it sounds to me as though some of this is, like Dr. Landry is mentioning, learning how to not say yes to everything, almost like learning a better management of self-care. Is that accurate?
Well, you led me right into talking a little bit about our chapter one, which is Microskills for Self-Care. And what I'll say is we intentionally made this our chapter one because we know that many industries, many workplaces don't talk about value, loud, mentor, model, self-care. And we really think, like, to be clear, we are emergency medicine physicians. Within the House of Medicine, emergency medicine has the highest rates of burnout and some of the highest rates of depression. And healthcare, people often say, is actually sick care because a lot of times we're not taking care of patients or the system doesn't really reimburse until they're sick, but that's a little bit of a deviation from back to self-care. You know, the medical training process and what Dr. Landry just shared about always saying yes, it's not a lot of teaching you how to take care of yourself. So we really believe that everything starts with the self. And the better you are at taking care of yourself and knowing how and setting in place boundaries to take care of yourself, then you're going to be even better as a team player and help take care of the team. And then together, all of you will be able to deliver on a better work product. So in that chapter on microskills for self-care, you know, audience members are like, oh, I'm sure they talk about the body because they're doctors. Well, yes, and we talk about financial health and getting your finances in order. We talk about social health and actually emotional and mental health. And one of the microskills in that chapter that I love that we didn't come up with, but it's read throughout the book, and it's something I think everybody needs to make sure they have, which is their personal board of directors. These are people that sit at your table, theoretical table, and they're your go-to people. You trust them, they trust you. And these are nurtured relationships and people that you go to when you have questions, when you need some coaching, when you want someone to brainstorm with. So that's part of taking care of yourself is having a personal board of directors.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're privileged to be speaking with the author of the authors of Microskills, Small Actions, Big Impact. We have Dr. Adara Landry and Dr. Risa Lewis, and we're talking a little bit about the book. We're not going to tell you the whole book because we want you to go out and buy the book. That's kind of the key to this. I want to ask about as to learning how to better utilize digital services to kind of when it comes to your micro skills. Dr. Landry, can you talk a little bit about that?
We definitely talk a lot about offloading tasks that no longer bring you joy or sense of purpose. And a lot of the administrative responsibilities that we have, not just at work, but also at home and within our household, can be offloaded. I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned digital, but I'm just going to start with my own experience of hiring a housekeeper now. I'm a house cleaner now. Obviously, my house cleaner is not a digital solution, but that was the first sort of step to me recognizing that I don't have to do it all once I have the financial means to offload, which wasn't, you know, early in my adult life, but later I was able to do that. It showed me that I can free up a lot of time to do things that really bring me joy, and I can also, you know, put money into the economy for those who really need the support. So it helps everyone to do that kind of thing. In regards to digital solutions, there are many, and I would say that some of the bigger things were that I moved my finances to be completely digital. Like, I don't go to any brick and mortar banks anymore. Like, I used to go to the bank and like deposit my check and do all of that stuff. But I've moved completely to online banking. My bank doesn't even have a physical location. And that saves me because we get checks and all sorts of things, from lectures and whatnot. And I can just deposit it with my camera. And that saves a ton, of time. And that's a perfect example of like finding the ways to streamline some of the tasks that you do regularly so that they're not as much, effort. Obviously, like with big, you know, websites like Amazon and such, you can do all sorts of like recurrent deliveries. But these are small little things that can just be offloaded from your brain, right? Like, we get automatic toilet paper. I never think about toilet paper because it just comes every month, and I never have to go worry about going to the grocery store to get more of it. And all of that time kind of adds up. And I want to speak to one thing.
Please.
And that is, in this book, we start off with three truths. The first truth is really aligned with your question. The first truth is time can only be spent. And the sooner people realize that, the more they are just attuned to how they are spending their time, knowing that they can never get that time back.
True.
You know, you can't put it into a savings account and say, in 2 weeks, I'm going to use an extra hour in my day. Like, that's not how it works. You'll always find some way to fill it, right? It's always going to push forward. The second is that the world is not equal, and that some of us start at different points than others, right? We have different networks. We have different pedigrees. We have different financial accounts. It's not the same in any single workplace. And the last is that learning is limitless if it's accessible. If people tell you what to do, then you are able to move forward in that direction. And honestly, the whole getting a house cleaner part, you know, that was actually told to me by someone. It's like, Adair, you're overworking yourself by like all these things on your on your plate. You have too many responsibilities. Start with the house cleaner. And someone told me that. They taught me that skill. And I thought, oh, really interesting, because I was actually quite ashamed and I felt guilty doing that. But the moment I saw the difference in my schedule and my time, I was like, oh, this is the best decision for myself.
It's interesting you talk about digital banking. It took me a while. I mean, I still go to the bank, but I also still have the digital access, and sometimes I'll move funds around on my phone. Do you feel that your book is demographically friendly, that maybe this might, like a lot of the, especially when it comes to the digital stuff, that, you know, a lot of the younger generation is doing this, and they're doing it with ease, but yet a lot of older folks who might be 40-plus may need a little bit of more coaxing and some guidance with your book?
We wrote a book. You know, when we initially wrote this book, we had expected it to resonate mostly with that younger audience you're naming, early career professionals, Gen Z, millennials,
yep.
who I think, like you said, have a really strong interest in digital solutions. And so I think that totally aligns. That being said, when we have, you know, we've been on a lot of shows, we've sent this book to a lot of people, we've had 77-year-olds, 60-year-olds tell us, boy, I wish I had this book 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
This would have saved me in so many ways. So even if someone who's older is reading this book and says, this might not be for me, like I'm kind of fine with my bank, but I'm going to recommend this to my mentees, that still helps. I have seen a lot of people say that they're going to use this book for their, you know, their team at work, the people beneath them who can read this book together and decide, you know, what's best for us as a team and use it as a guide that way. I've also seen a lot of people say they're going to give it to their children, especially for like graduation, upcoming graduation, because there's a lot of advice for folks who are just entering the workplace, and you know, again, they might not have that mentor, that network where all of these secrets can be told to them. And our goal was really to write a book that we wish we had earlier in our careers.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we got a few more minutes with Dr. Adair Landry and Dr. Risa Lewis talking about their book, Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact. Dr. Lewis, my question to you, probably one of my last questions, is local reputation. How important is it that we individually not only nurture our reputation, how crucial is it, and what are some ways to be able to nurture it?
So we think it's very crucial and important, and we sort of share with the reader why. And as people are growing and getting promoted and, you know, establishing expertise, being invited to speak, writing papers and collaborating on projects, you know, across state, across the country, across the world, it's very easy to sort of neglect your home, so to speak, meaning your office, your hospital, your company. And we emphasize that part of taking care of yourself and taking care of your team is remembering the job for which you've been hired, remembering your roles and responsibilities. So you don't want to neglect those. You don't want to not pay attention to those as you grow, because we want people to soar. We want people to be successful in the workplace. And we want them to be mindful of that local. And that also comes into play in our final chapter when we talk about looking for next and new opportunities, that it's very easy when you, say, have secured that next opportunity to just not create a plan to actually help your team as you leave, and all of a sudden all of your responsibilities get delegated or divvied up. And we want people to be thoughtful, intentional towards the team and not do that.
Ladies, is there a question I haven't asked you, or something we haven't touched upon but you feel is really important to leave something else or something important with our listeners, that they'll go out starting tomorrow and get this book off the bookshelves?
Number one, I want to say thank you so much for having us on today. And for people that are listening that are wondering, like, oh, is this a book for doctors, or, oh, is this a book for women?
No.
Answer is no and no. In that, yes, we happen to be physician authors, and we happen to be educators. So we're actually really well qualified to write this book. And we have written something that is accessible, that gives the how-to, and that's what makes this book different than some of the other business self-help books that we read and that we see when we're going through the airport and looking at the table of books.
And if I believe, as I said, it's available starting tomorrow in all bookstores, or just certain ones?
It's available tomorrow. We launch tomorrow, April 16th. It's awesome. Going to be in all major bookstores and online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. You can also order it from your local bookstore. And you can also order from your library. It will also be on Audible. It's narrated by the two of us.
Nice.
As well as Kindle. And if we can share that, if people want to meet us, we will actually be at the New York Public Library, the main branch in Bryant Park, on Wednesday at 6:00. And we would love to meet people who heard us on your show. That'd be amazing. And we'll be talking about the book with Jill Schlesinger from CBS.
Well, I want to thank both of you, Dr. Adair Landry and Dr. Risa Lewis, for being my guest. And is there a website? Should we direct them to any websites, or just go get the book?
We both have websites. Well, HarperCollins is our publisher. So okay. If they look at HarperCollins, MicroSkills, and also if they Google our names, Dr. Adair Landry and Dr. Risa Lewis, we each have websites that list all of the upcoming book talks, as well as all the work that we do to try to make it better for everybody else.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining me and kind of giving a little bit of preview of this, and look forward to see this becoming a best-selling book.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much. You got it.
Take care.
We are going to step aside, and when we come back, the final installment... That's right, coming to Heartbreak Hill. here on Monday Night Talk, 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Located in downtown Whitman, McWiggins Pub is a fashionable, upscale Irish sports pub with a lively bar and dining room. With all the class of a Boston pub, McWiggins serves a great pub menu featuring favorites like beer-battered fried pickles, Reuben sandwiches, shepherd's pie, bangers and mash, and meatloaf. And of course, they have Guinness on tap. McWiggins is a great place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. With 8 flat-screen TVs, you'll always find yourself in the center of the action of your favorite team. And don't forget the patio at McWiggins right next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in downtown Whitman.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, we have arrived at the final segment of Monday Night Talk, your Patriots Day edition of Monday Night Talk, and it's been quite the marathon. But we're closing things out strong as we come down Heartbreak Hill. And I got a couple of perennial all-stars with me as we're going to, if you remember, if you check the podcast, if you religiously listened to the show a couple of weeks ago, I had the sinister one here, Keith Hayes, radio personality, hubazoo.com, has his own show, The Booth, also produces other shows. We talked a little pre-WrestleMania, kind of gave our thoughts, and we thought we would bring in a third voice, someone who actually was in Philadelphia for WrestleMania. He's been on the show many times before. Fantastic guy, great friend, and if you're somebody who attends, any game, you know, the game days for the Patriots and the Revs at Gillette Stadium, he's the voice, Mr. Mike Riley. Mike, how are you?
Kev, I'm great, thank you, and I'm still on a WrestleMania hangover. I'm telling people, it's probably going to take me about a month to recover.
and of course, Keith Hayes. Keith, how are you since the last time we chatted?
Good times, good day, good everything. I'm just ready to roll, ready to talk about this.
So I'm gonna throw it out there, Mike, because we didn't have you on the conversation prior. Leading up, as you're traveling down to be now, you did both nights, correct?
Correct.
Okay. What was your anticipation? Did you have a chance to kind of travel around to some of the, usually they have booths and they have all kinds of things that happen prior. Did you have a chance to attend those? And what was your anticipation for WrestleMania?
Yeah. So, you know, Kev, it kind of reminded me 5 years ago, WrestleMania 35, when it was in New York at MetLife Stadium, the last big one before COVID. In fact, that was the last one night of WrestleMania. It brought back a lot of memories driving down New York through that way. And as you know, Philadelphia is only about an hour away from New York City. Same anticipation with that, with the drive. And yes, we did go to, it's the formerly called Access. Now it's called The World. It's pretty much the same stuff. They just changed the name. I'm going to tell you right now, WWE, you can see it with the merchandise and the fan interaction stuff. They have really, not that they weren't super corporate before, but they're like corporate steroid level now, I think. And then that's because you're seeing the Nick Khan effect with the Fanatics branding. Fanatics had their own store there. Mitchell and Ness had their own clothing line of WrestleMania attire. They had a ton of autographed items, again, all branded by Fanatics, where I think years ago, WWE would just have something from their own thing, but now it's all outsourced, and the corporate aspect, you were definitely seeing that there because of Nick Khan, who has made a real big impact in WWE now in the post-Vince McMahon era, if you will. But yeah, it was, you know, fans all over the world, international. It was just a really great, unbelievable time. And now that it is, that's probably one of the things with COVID, as I mentioned before, the New York one, that was the last one that was one night of WrestleMania. And now, 2020, it's gone to two nights. And that's one good thing that got out of COVID, because you can double up the cash value with the attendance and, of course, merchandise sales on a two-night thing. So it was a lot of fun, great time, but, man, it doesn't matter what kind of temperature it is, drink a lot of water. Seriously, stay hydrated, no matter what.
Keith, we're used to seeing WrestleMania. I mean, there was a time when it was all in one day. Now they've changed it to it's two nights. Watching it two separate four-hour sittings. What was your expectation getting ready leading up to the first bell?
Well, it's funny. We talked about this the last time I was on your show, and I said it was a home run making it two nights, because that last WrestleMania that was one night, the biggest complaint was it didn't get over to almost 1 a.m.
Yeah.
It was a long, late WrestleMania. People were kind of like, by the time the main event happened, they were kind of like, oh, this dragged on. And then they came up with this idea to make it two nights. And like I said, when we were on the show the last time, I said it was a win-win, because now you don't see wrestlers losing out because a match got pushed back because they ran out of time. You've got a lot of time to bring in NXT matches. You've got time to bring in people from, TNA and stuff and do these other matches and really get to show off your product. I like it. For me, it starts on Friday night. That SmackDown before and then the Hall of Fame. I'm not a fan of the Hall of Fame being in front of the fans, though. But other than that, I was very anticipating this event to begin. And it was awesome. It was awesome for the two nights.
145,000 people combined, two night effort. Mike, you happen to be there. Give me your details on night number one. Where were you located, and what were your takeaways from night one?
Sure, night one. I thought right from the get go, it started off with a great match, set the tone for the whole weekend there. Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley. And you know the whole history of Becky being in the first women's main event, Rhea Ripley, who is just so over right now. That really set the tone big time. But I'll tell you this, guys. Being there night one, now as we know, and going into WrestleMania, I was ear on the side of caution with Mother Nature. And WWE, they rolled the dice, because Philadelphia is Mid-Atlantic. And, we were up here in Boston last Thursday, Thursday before WrestleMania. We had that snow and the sleet and all that, and you go 100 miles south, it could have been a lot worse. So they rolled the dice, and they really lucked out with no rain or anything along those lines. But Saturday night, it got cold. Mm. I mean, it started, I think, in like 52, 53 degrees, but, man, you guys know that. Once that sun goes down, the temperature drops.
Triple H mentioned that on the press conference on Sunday night. Triple H had mentioned, he said, he gave props to the fans who were there Saturday night, because he said they got cold.
Yeah,
he said what a lot of people don't realize is that when it gets cold, it brings up the risk of injury for the wrestlers, because your muscles tighten. So that was their biggest concern behind the scenes was people getting injured.
Great point. And also, I know they put the heated they made the ring heated around the area there. But the other thing, you guys know this, when you've been at a football or any sort of sporting event, when it gets cold, the energy gets sucked out sometimes of the fans. So if you're not bundled up, and I think a lot of people were not prepared. Like, I wore thermals, I wore a turtleneck, all players' clothing. I know the Northeast region of weather like us,
right.
But a lot of international people, this is a global, right? We're talking people from London and Australia. It's going to be like 60 degrees, but no. So I think that the weather was, that played a little bit of a factor. Night two, and to get long answer short, sorry, we were in night one, which is awesome. It's essentially, if you've been to Gillette Stadium, the red suits right there, okay? So it's pretty much the same layout as Gillette Financial Field. Very nice. Mm-hmm. And then we were fortunate enough, night two, to get upgraded to and we were with a good friend of ours who was also brother-in-law, Rock Johnson. So we got invited in there by him. So that was pretty cool.
Nice. Wow. Super cool. So I want to run down real quick. So Rhea Ripley defeats Becky Lynch. You got, yep. And then you had, and I was actually texting Keith at the same time when I noticed that both belts for one would you had the unified tag team titles, and they didn't have them all on one hanger. They had two separate, and I sent a message to Keith. And I'm like, God, they're splitting up the titles, which I thought was fantastic. Of course, you've got Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. They won one set, and then you had The Miz and R-Truth, who is a fan favorite right now. People love him. They win the other. They win the I believe the Raw titles. You had Rey Mysterio and Andrade defeated Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. You had Uso, Jay coming a winner over Jimmy. And then I think this might be Keith's favorite, Bianca Belair, Jay Cargill, Naomi defeated Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. And we had Sami Zayn winning over Gunther. And then The Rock and Roman Reigns beating Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins via pinfall. Now, this is what I'm going to say in regards to this. Usually, and I could be wrong, and I'm willing to be corrected, you don't, for WrestleManias, you don't see a lot of titles change. You'll see maybe one, maybe two, but your first night, you saw new champions. You had two new tag team champions and a new intercontinental champion. I'm like, uh-oh. To me, I'm like, oh, this could spell doom for Cody. Maybe he's not finishing his story. What says you guys, Mike? What says you in regards to, seeing championships changing hands on night one?
I mean, that Intercontinental title was huge because they really pushed Gunther. Read it however you want it. 666 days. So, you know what that is, like the devil. If you believe in that stuff. So I think that was kind of interesting, right? But he had a heck of a push. But I think Gunther is definitely, he'll be back somehow because they have that bash in Berlin in August, and I think he'll be a headline there. But that was a big night, absolutely big change there, the Intercontinental title. Kev, I thought the same thing too. With you have to have that psychology as a wrestling fan, like, okay, so we have Gunther losing. And now we have Rhea retaining. What does that mean for Cody? You're 100% right. Game playing into the main event for night two, trying to figure that out there. I will tell you that I love the tag team titles being unified. As good as it, it was great to finally, split rather. They were unified. Now they're split to the Raw and the SmackDown.
Yep.
They did look like, the titles up there hanging up were so big in the football stadium. It looked like Munchkins, as you know. But it was a really good matchup, and I'm happy for the tag team winners right there.
Excellent. Keith, what says you in regards to night one, seeing championships changing hands? I mean, was that ominous to you as to what we could see
for night two? My predictions were pretty much dead on for that night. I actually had predicted Gunther until I saw the whole "you owe me a favor." And when I saw that "you owe me a favor," I went right on Facebook and I was like, I'm changing my pick. This is going to be Sami Zayn. They're going with the whole Rocky three, and this is the promise from Apollo Creed. And then it's, his wife's, ringside, like Adrian. And I'm like, he's going to win this. I'm like, Gunther's losing and they're going to really push him to become, something bigger than Intercontinental. I still feel my prediction is he'll become face. I think Imperium is going to turn on him either at Backlash or, like you said, maybe in the Germany. But other than that, it was pretty much a good night for me. And I'm glad that they took those tag titles and split them up because there's too much talent there right now.
There is a ton
in the tag division. There's just too much talent. Too much.
A ton of talent. And again, if you're just tuning in to this edition of Monday Night Talk, we have two great guys who are fans of sports entertainment. The Sarge, He is none other than Mike Riley, a game day voice at Gillette Stadium for the Patriots and the Revolution, and Keith Hayes, radio person.
Yes.
Yep, radio personality, Keith Hayes, for hoobazoo.com, as he's host of the booth, and he also joins in on other shows that he helps produce.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to just talk about something real quick here that Mike, who was there and talked about this corporate changing, and I you know, I have a good, pretty good, solid insider who works for Disney and stuff like that. He handles production behind the scenes. He has to wear production black so he doesn't end up on camera and has to be paid.
Yeah, yeah.
But he did tip me off about this Silver Lake Holdings purchasing a sole share of Endeavor on Tuesday. Wednesday, the story did break that Silver Lake Holdings, who was already part of that conglomerate that owns Endeavor, are now sole ownership. He did tell me that they were coming around on Thursday and they automatically started wanting to make changes. Some of the changes that happened production-wise that people really probably wouldn't know that's not in the industry. Friday night on SmackDown, there was absolutely no pyrotechnics. There was no Titantron that came out the side. That was because they took away those areas and sold more seats. Then on Saturday night, for that first WrestleMania night and the second WrestleMania night, he told me that they also had to work together and hash things out. They took away a lot of the pyrotechnics around the stadium, the top of the stadium, and they only used pyrotechnics for fighter entrances, wrestler entrances, and sold more seats. So that gate and getting that record was part of that.
Well, and Mike, what might also, yeah, you don't want to say, and Mike, I'm going to just throw this in there, and that is, yeah, is when they did the special tribute last Monday.
Triple H did make he said no Titantron, but we've got a monitor for
he
you.
He said that it's this little tiny monitor that they built in.
The Rock kept making comments about no fireworks, and people were like, oh, he meant this. And I'm like, look, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I have a very good, solid source, and he told me that there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, and one of the reasons why everybody was pumping up Triple H and why we saw Stephanie McMahon come out, who we haven't seen in a long time, is because the relationship between Triple H and Khan isn't as solid as people realize. So we'll see what happens with this Silver Lake Holdings and things of this such. So
go ahead, Mike. Did you want to kind of jump in on that, or?
And that's interesting you say that, Keith, with the relationship with Paul Levesque, Triple H, and Nick Khan not being so solid. That's some good background. I did not have any instinct to that. Because if you saw at the end of WrestleMania, Nick Khan did congratulate Cody Rhodes.
Yep.
Yes, he did.
Right. And Triple H came out too, and Bruce Pritchard, all that. So I thought it was, you know, happy-go-lucky, everyone in a good mood. So I did not realize that. That's very interesting.
I don't think it's Nick Khan himself. I think it's the Silver Lake Holdings people telling Nick Khan that this is what they want. And Nick is, you know, Nick has to justify his job in telling Triple H. And Triple H is going to say, hey, Nick, you know, this is the pyrotechnics and stuff is a big deal. We can't just cut it all, you know. So as you saw, there was a lot less pyrotechnics at WrestleMania this year, and that was why they sold more seats.
Especially, you know, I always notice National Anthem, they always do like the, when the Rockets' red glare, those go up nothing,
And
you're right, it's just the entrances. So the other thing, too, with the SmackDown and the Raw there with that new setup, I like it. And I think that's part of WWE. Yeah, because you know what, the Titantron, as cool as that was, I think that, you know,
overdone. Well, you think about
overdone.
It. You eliminate that Titantron. You know how many seats you add? That's the whole backside of a stadium that you usually can't sell tickets for that you now can.
Yeah.
And that's big money. That's all about money. And those people are going to buy merch.
Well, they were also saying, but there's also been, you know, rumors over the years to how WWE has always inflated their numbers. And so I wonder if that was.
So here's another thing that I was kind of tipped off on. Were you guys watching and seeing how many times the censorship messed up on cutting stuff out?
Yeah.
I'm hearing that's purposely done because they're preparing for Netflix. Because the word is that when they go to Netflix, all bets are off.
So it's going
to
be like,
are going to be uncensored.
So it's almost going to be like what Howard Stern was on terrestrial radio. And then when he made the jump, I mean, he wasn't egregious about it. But if you listen to the Howard Stern show.
Do you think that works for WWE if they go that route with the promos and stuff being uncensored?
Yeah, I think so. I think it does.
You don't think they turn away their kid fan base?
No, I think you will. I think they will a little bit, but they have to play it fair where parents would be like, oh, no, we're not going to watch this. So you got to toe that fine line a little bit. And that's the reason why WWE has been public. But, you know, they're just so hot right now.
Yeah.
It's you really get a strike while the iron's hot. WrestleMania, I think it's sold out 4 months before without even knowing a card. Maybe 6 months before.
It's
without
amazing.
Even knowing a card at all, right? You know, now next month, Backlash going to France. They're going international now. It's huge. Yeah.
So, gentlemen, we got 10 minutes left, and I don't know if that's going to be enough time for us to kind of squeeze everything in. But let's talk night two. You start off with a bang. Drew McIntyre defeats Seth Rollins. There's another title change. But wait, let's go over and let's tease and taunt CM Punk. And yeah, you don't mess with the pipe bomb, right?
Why?
What happens? He takes off his brace and he just knocks him. And I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. And it was another text message to Keith. I'm like going. And I think this might have been well before, but I'm like, I have a feeling we're going to see tonight. I didn't know when. You're going to see that Money in the Bank, Senor Money in the Bank briefcase come out of nowhere. And damn, you know, once homeless Damian Priest cashing in and being the first Puerto Rican descent.
Right? Second.
No, but I'm saying the first in 50 years.
Yes, Pedro Morales.
Since Pedro Morales. Yeah. And that was fantastic. So I'm like, oh, and again, going back earlier in the conversation when I mentioned, I'm like, first night you're seeing all these titles changing hands. This is really...
Well, we discussed this. We knew Seth was going. We knew if Becky lost, he was going because the word behind the scenes was they need time off. They got to be with their daughter. Yeah. So we knew Seth was losing. Well, I thought Drew was going to carry that belt for a little bit.
No.
I wasn't expecting that.
No, they did. No, who was it? Was it Bianca who got, like, she got beat after seconds after by the man?
Yes.
So it was kind of...
Becky
Lynch, that's right, the man. So then we go to, you got the Pride versus the Final Testament. Okay.
That was a bust match. Okay. They could have did so much with that match. That match was a bust.
One thing, too, if I could just touch real quick on that championship match with McIntyre.
Please do.
Just real quick. So McIntyre may not be signed yet to a new contract. He's due to be signed any day now. But I think they were kind of toying with him and toying with the audience, like, okay, he hasn't signed, so let him win. And then, of course, the CM Punk comes in and, you know, he had the obsession with him, McIntyre. He being McIntyre, the obsession with Punk. And then, of course, Damian Priest wins right there. So there's something with that contract there. He may not re-sign or not, but I think he will now, especially with CM Punk back. So
that's
I just want to touch on that. That's going to be a great feud, yeah.
That'll be a great feud. Talking about a feud, which was LA Knight versus AJ Styles. Styles is kind of on the cusp of retiring allegedly.
He put him over.
Logan Paul beating Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. Logan Paul, who is seemingly more and more... showing that he belongs.
I said this when we were on the show last. I said they're both going to put him over because they respect the things he does. And in that moment of that match, this man does a swanton bomb off the top and goes right into a frog splash. And I said, that's why they're putting him over. That was it. I'm like, this is why those two guys are putting this guy
over. He also has followers prior to coming in.
He has a ton of followers.
And
they could still just roll with him doing basic moves and say he's bringing all these followers and he's bringing Prime. They could do that, but this guy can effing wrestle.
Good call there. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, Mike.
No, I think he's 100% spot on. Those guys are there to put Logan Paul over, and he is just way hot right now with the audience. So you got to ride the hot hand.
Even his mic work is just, oh my God.
It's good. And then you have Bayley beating Io Sky. And I'm like, this really, really puts
That's
a damper.
My bad prediction.
Really, really puts a damper going, Cody's not, there is no story to finish here. It's not going to happen. And so then you get Cody Rhodes and you back and forth. And we had no idea what bloodline rules were going to be. Mike, you know, you're in the stadium at this time. You're watching this.
Oh my God.
What was it like? Because it was towards the end, it was fast and furious. The different individuals who were coming into the ring to partake and try to sway things one way or the other. Give us your thoughts as you're watching the individuals come in the ring and take turns with each individual, Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes.
Well, I got a side story for you, too.
Oh,
you
no.
You know, I told you we were, no, you'll like it. It's nothing bad. Mm. But you know how we're in the, suite?
Yep.
I told you that for night two, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're in the suite. Now, in the suite there, you can see through the glass who's next to you. The suite to our left was The Undertaker and his wife, Michelle McCool.
Ooh.
So, right? So we got tipped off that The Undertaker was going to be in the main event. And I was like, you're kidding me. And they said, right? And they said, no. And I'm like, oh, my God. So, true and behold, The Undertaker gets escorted out of the suite right next to us. I saw the security with him an hour before the main event. And I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to be in. So I had my phone ready to go, knowing that he's going to come out. And I'm still mad at myself. I missed the initial ding, but I know. And the place just, you could hear everyone like gasp.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. You know, it was just shocked. It was shocked. I think everybody was expecting Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I was.
We were talking about the subliminals when the Rock beat up Cody, and when he had that truck in the background with those two guys. We're like, that's a subliminal.
Yeah.
That's there for a reason.
Yep.
And we all thought it was going to be Stone Cold, but it was still good.
Yeah.
It was still good.
It was still very good. And that, you know, Rock Cena had a great rival, Undertaker and Rock in that Attitude Era, and everyone, you know, Undertaker, he's the legend. And then, so with all that happening there, when Jimmy Uso comes down, or Jey Uso, rather, comes out to get away from Jimmy on that, does a spear off of the
crazy.
The ramp. Unbelievable. It was incredible.
That was crazy.
And then, of course, and then, you know, deja vu again like last year with Solo Sikoa. It's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But then, of course, John Cena comes out. Did the Shield come out before Cena, or was it Rollins? I can't remember.
Rollins came out as Shield.
Yeah. Okay.
And
there you go.
Yeah.
He got his hair.
He did.
He did. Dyed his hair after the match. Right?
Costume change.
So credit to him.
So I have to ask you, gentlemen, we got like 2-3 minutes left here, and I'm going to ask when you talked about The Rock. Now, I don't know how often you guys watch. If you watch not only SmackDown, Raw, but also the Tuesday night program that they do, and there was I want to say about a month to 6 weeks ago, you had The Undertaker knock out Bron Breakker, right? Now, and here's the preference on why I'm using that is when The Undertaker showed up, would you prefer that he choke slammed The Rock? Or what if he just on the button knocked The Rock out with a punch?
Choke slam was fitting, but I think he should have been in Undertaker gear and not Biker Undertaker, American Badass. That was my. It was great, but I still wish we got the Undertaker, not the American Badass Undertaker.
Okay, Mike.
Well, I'm with you too, Keith. The American Badass. Give me the Dead Man gimmick over that. But the fact that we did get him and you had the crowd erupt and. You know, to Undertaker's credit, he has become out of character the last few years since retirement.
Yep.
He's gone on those one-man, dead-man shows. And it was actually really good. If you ever have a chance to see it, I highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. I'm not just saying that because he's my favorite wrestler of all time, but I highly, highly recommend it. It's really good stuff. And he is, you know, he's known for that. So Undertaker, chokeslam all day. He, if you can't do the tombstone anymore, that's the best you're going to get with the chokeslam, so give me that all day. Not a problem.
All right, we got less than a minute left here. Cody Rhodes, undisputed champion, WWE champion. Does he have a long run? Is he the new face of the company? Is it something they try out for 3 to 6 months and see what happens? Is he the champion for WrestleMania 41? Mike?
So I think he's going to go back and forth. I think you're going to see him and The Rock have a match. There's definitely a tease there on the Raw after Mania, whatever Raw handed to him. I wouldn't be surprised if
Don't
Roman Reigns
my heart
back.
Again.
That could be backlash. That could be the backlash main event.
What did he put? Any idea what he put? What Rock put in Cody's hands? Do we know if he put anything?
Don't know.
That's the biggest tease going.
Awesome. Biggest it is.
My real quick thought on that for me is faces don't carry belts long.
No, you need
not
a heel.
In this era of social media, I feel so, like heels carry the belts. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
But remember, it is the Paul Levesque era. Just remember that they made that very clear. It's a Triple H Paul Levesque era.
Mm-hmm.
They made that, you know, kept going over that many times at WrestleMania. I'm not saying that Cody will not, and I agree. I think it's always nice to have a babyface with the chase and have that moment there. So I think he will be champion for a good, you know, 6 months. Might lose at a SummerSlam and then go for the chase again at WrestleMania. I think Cody, I feel very confident in saying this. Cody is the modern day Hulk Hogan.
In the voice of the wise man, I am a Paul Levesque guy. gentlemen, Mike Riley, game day voice at Gillette Stadium for the Patriot and Revolution. Keith, Sinister One Hayes of Hoobazoo, the booth. I want to thank you both for joining me. I'm going to leave a quick cliffhanger here. I think that Gunther is the guy to watch to have the belt eventually. One of those two world championships. Watch for it. And maybe we'll convene somewhere down the road, gentlemen. A deal?
Yeah.
Any day to talk wrestling works for me.
Excellent. Folks, that is all the time that we have. We have crossed the finish line. I don't know if our time is something that's worthy of celebrating or just that we finished is enough. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.